Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans. Welcome to this latest edition of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. I am joined by our communications manager, Paul Carruthers, to my right. We are at the Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. And Paul, we are damn near close to 250 episodes.
I know, it's crazy.
It's really crazy. And it's about time we had this guest that we have on today, because this guy's amazing. This is Steve Radley, who is the showrunner for Pressure to Rise.
And showrunner?
Showrunner.
That's the title?
That's kind of the title.
Not when like
the
director.
Showrunner's above the director.
Come on, really? Man. I didn't know that. This is what I'm here for, learn
shit. Well, it's for TV. It's not film, so.
Okay. But maybe that's why I get off the director thing.
But we know a lot goes into creating these shows. But from your perspective, Steve, we've got you on. And as we understand it, after a race weekend, you go into a dark room for however amount of time you have and don't emerge until you've got our next episode. Is that kind of a fair assessment?
That's pretty much the case. After we leave the track, I'm kind of, in a way, I'm on my own, but I have access to other team members if I need their opinion. I send segments and stuff, but for the most part, I'm the guy that edits it when we get home.
Okay.
So,
when you have a race weekend and you go into it knowing compelling battles and things that are going to happen, does it generally play according to plan, or do you come out of the weekend and go, oh man, I got to form what happened and make this all into kind of a theme or an idea?
Well, we really don't have much of a plan going into the weekend because we don't know what's going to happen, right? But those are the moments that make our show better. In other words, PJ Jacobson getting his first win. You know, in this current episode, we spent a lot of time on that. But here's kind of expanding on your question. What people don't realize is when we're in pit lane and we're shooting, you know, crew guys talking to each other, riders coming in, we have absolutely no idea what they're saying while we're shooting it. The only guy that does.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we have to kind of formulate this stuff after. And Tanner Nguyen, our audio guy, is the only guy that really hears anything. And he speaks into my ear if something major is happening. But for the most part, it's all done after I get home, and then we kind of figure it out and kind of weave the story then. Mm-hmm. But it's so weird to shoot this stuff and have no clue what they're saying.
But obviously shooting this stuff is important because you can't fake that part.
Right.
Once you get back into the little dark room, you can kind of do whatever, but you have to have the material to deal with. And I think what you guys do a good job with, and I see you out there all the time because I'm trying to do the same thing, but just for social media, but you have a good feel, I can tell, for being in the right place. Sometimes that's luck. I mean, I have a good knowledge of kind of what's going on, so I can kind of tell, like, hey, I should go down there right now because something might happen. But I always see you in the same spot, so I think you do a good job of that as well.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, having the experience going out there over the years. You know, we have Nick King and James Ballerstein are the other two shooters. This weekend it'll be Sam Thurman as the third shooter, and I won't be shooting as much. But we all have been around this for a while now, and you kind of know where to be and not get in the way. And I'm hyper conscious myself of getting run over or getting in a crew member's way, because the last thing you want to do is impede anybody from doing their job, you know. And they understand we're there for a job too, you know, but they're obviously priority over us, you know.
How much do you feel like they're changing what they have to say when they see you there compared to when they're just, you know, when you're not around?
I wish I could give you an answer to that.
I think for
the most part, everybody's just straight up with us,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the things that they kind of maybe edit or change is they don't, you know, if something goes wrong with the bike, they're not going to tell us who the manufacturer of that certain part was on the bike that, you know, blew up or whatever.
And they also have some faith in you and some trust in you that you're not going to do them dirty. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of how it works. They know that, like, if they say something they probably shouldn't have, that you're going to be knowledgeable enough to know that they shouldn't have said that and maybe not use it.
Absolutely. And that, again, is just kind of building their trust over this third year now that we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Ed Sullivan once said to me, it just cracked me up. He's like, I think you're probably the most powerful person in this paddock because you have all the dirt.
It's true. Right?
I just started laughing and I'm like, there's really not that much dirt. There really isn't. You know, it's yeah, we do hear some crazy stuff when I get back home and listen. But for the most part, everybody's doing their job, getting through it. You know, the stuff that, you know, may not be seen is more of the stuff that would maybe be considered drama that's fabricated. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't fabricate anything.
Right.
And sometimes there's things that happen that if we included that may kind of cross that line of, oh, did they just do that for a dramatic show? You know, and it's more or less, you know, team members maybe getting upset because, you know, they missed this or they didn't do that. And it's just people working, doing their thing, mistakes happen and, you know, move on.
You know, it's interesting, though, because when you have the promos for the next episode and we get them for our social media and if we're writing a caption about it, I've told you this before. When I see those promos, I get such a sense of pride about Moto America when I see the stuff that you capture. And I get kind of envious sometimes because I'll see a crew chief in the pit box saying something and it'll be like, how did he catch that? I mean, it's so good. It's like, I'm always looking for a story to tell, right? And there are stories in throughout the paddock. And for these teams, these riders and their riders and crew chiefs, how they have this repartee with each other. It's incredible how you capture that. And I'll give you an example. I'm going to call out a guy, Dave Weaver. I've always really liked Dave a lot. Dave's kind of quiet, doesn't say much. To me, he's like the funniest guy there is. I mean, some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth is hilarious. And I know Chuck Cicchetto is kind of the class clown. He is that funny guy. But I don't know if Dave knows how funny he really is. But you bring that out in him. It's interesting how you've created helped create these personalities or bring them out, promoted them.
Yeah, when you say you, it's not really me. It's
right.
It's my team of six. You know, this week we're a team of seven. Yeah, Dave has some of the funniest interactions that I can't put on TV, you know, because when we get out there early before the bikes go out, you know, sometimes the team guys are just sitting around and they'll be telling stories of where they ate or what they were doing this weekend. And Dave always has a great story. And I'm, you know, standing far away and I start shooting it because I don't know what they're saying, you know, and then they all look at me and they all just start laughing, realizing that I'm never going to use this, you know, and I don't really hear it until I get home or if Tanner tells me, you know, it's pretty fun. But along those lines too, to write this kind of, you know, from thing to thing, a lot of people don't know this, but Hannah Lopa actually does a lot on our show. She helps me write when I get home and you know, especially like a couple of years ago when I wasn't, you know, that in tune with all the race lingo and all that stuff. I was kind of a newbie to the racing world, but she kind of helped me through that. But she's an important part of our show, helps with the interviews and helps write it when I get home. So.
That's cool. Do you guys do a script or create an outline out of what you've done? And it's kind of free form until you get there, right?
Yeah. So on track, we have Grant Gopal is our editor this year. And when we come in after a session, we basically give him all the footage and he syncs the audio with all our cameras. And he starts going through all of the stuff in pit lane. And anywhere where he hears something that's decent, he just basically, you know, whoever we have mic'd up that day, he just gives me, you know, an Ed Sullivan timeline, a Richard Stamboli timeline. And then that way, you know, when I get home, I have all these clips kind of already in order, you know, like say from practice one. And then I put them all in one timeline. And as I listen to what's happening, that's where we kind of develop the narration that goes around it. Because the narration's kind of like the glue to get you from one place to another.
Right.
And to say things that no one really said in an interview or in pit lane, you know. So that's kind of how that works.
You guys have a little bit of a setup where, well, you do. Let's face it. You bring them up for interviews afterwards, generally crew chiefs and riders. Do you ever have any difficulties in getting a rider to come up, getting a rider to talk about it, whether they had good or bad, a crew chief? Do you have to coach them? Do they ever ghost you and not show up? What are some of the behind the scenes things about that portion of it? Do they know they're obligated to do it?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't even know if they're obligated to do it.
Okay.
But Yes, there are a couple that have ghosted us, Matthew Schultz, but
him—he
did it just once back. We're good, but it was a process of kind of developing trust in these guys to see what we're doing, and literally, it's so easy. It's so easy, you know, and everybody realizes that something like this could promote the series in a way that other things that are out there don't.
Right.
So they all want to be a part of it. You know, they all think it's fun. I don't know if they think it's fun to do, but I don't know. Cause if I was a crew member, I'm not sure I would want to be mic'd up in pit lane, but you know, I sure do appreciate these guys that do, you know?
So there are some times then where they say or do some things that you can't show.
Yeah, of course.
And without naming names or giving examples specifically, can tell us, is it like bad language? Is it losing their cool? Is it, you know?
No, it's both.
Okay.
It's both. It's something, you know, like I mentioned before, something maybe a part on a bike that they don't want to mention a manufacturer. And they don't really do that even on live, or they don't do that anywhere.
Right.
So they're not going to do it in our show, and that's fine. But it's, you know, it's just, I don't know. It things that don't make it really, there's no really good dirt that I have, which, you know, sorry to disappoint anybody who thinks that there would be. It's just normal people working hard and in a crazy environment that get emotional. And
right, it's competitive.
Exactly. It's competitive. People say stuff they probably regret later, you know. But yeah, it's there's some good juicy jokes and there's some funny stories, but nothing that if anybody ran for office that would get him in trouble later.
You know, it's funny, Paul, you've talked about this a little bit. You think about the MotoGP paddock or even World Superbike. Sometimes our riders, they almost like each other too much. You know, we want them to have a little bit more of, are they too friendly, Steve?
Not, I mean, no, they could never be friendly enough to me, but
well,
between each other, yeah. It was kind of nice when Baz was here.
Right.
You know, Baz kind of brought that a little bit.
Yeah. He kind of stirred it.
He kind of stirred things up. And there's a moment that we missed on camera that I wish we would have gotten. I think it was somebody came over to him one day after one of those races when there's some bumping and grinding and they were yelling at each other, and it would have been good for our show, but none of us were there with the camera when it happened, you know? So, but, yeah, I mean, it's really cool that these guys are all friends and they battled each other growing up, you know, but yeah, I think Baz kind of brought that fire, and Petrucci last year.
Right.
I mean, I remember Gagne going on there and just saying, I've never wanted to beat anybody so bad, and beat someone so bad in my whole life. You know?
No, he'll tell you, like,
exactly.
Like he says, if he loses to Cameron Bobier or whatever, sure, he's not going to like it. But he said that he like refused to lose to Petrucci.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it would be nice to have a villain, but you know, these guys are, they're all cool and they're friendly and I really enjoy it, you know?
So before each round, an episode of Pressure to Rise comes out, which is a review of the previous round. And it's kind of from the time of our previous round to just before the next round, you have that amount of time. That's pretty short sometimes. And it's probably always short, no matter how long it is between rounds. Would you like to have more time? And
of course I would love to have more time.
Right.
That's you know, when we have the 1 week off, man, like coming up after COTA, we got one weekend off and going to New Jersey. So it takes about 120 hours to edit an episode. So do the math. Right. But, you know, essentially maybe 30 of that is done on track. So when I get home, I got like about 90 hours ish to finish the show. So when we only have one weekend, that's pretty much all I do.
Wow.
So, but, yeah.
Well, was that a mandate when this kind of happened? This was how it was going to be done. It was going to be reviewing the previous round in time to see it before the next round. It was never a situation like other series where they do a documentary that's off season that kind of reviews what happened.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of came from Larry Meyer, LDM Worldwide, who's basically the guy who hired me for this, and he does everything, all TV, everything. It's LDM Worldwide for all of Moto America, and that's kind of between LDM and Moto America. They kind of figure it out, and then it kind of trickles on down to me, and I just say, okay, yeah, we can do this, Larry. You know, we can work this out. I mean, in the perfect world, you know, we would shoot it, you know, like Drive to Survive does, Formula One. We would shoot the whole season, and then we would have a couple months to do it, and then we'd release it maybe the week of Daytona or mm-hmm. something like that. That's right. My dream, but, you know, it's, you know, we'll do whatever, you know, Moto America and Larry wants to do, because they're the boss.
I mean, I, like I said, when I see just the promos, I get all excited and I can't wait for the next round. I do tear up. I actually do tear up. I've told our guys that.
I've teared up a couple times. I'm not going to lie. Working on the weekend and or even at home, you know, there's just, man, it's fun. Everybody just treats me so nicely, you know, maybe because I'm the guy that puts them on TV. I don't know. I'm sure it's genuine because everybody's awesome. But at times it gets to me, you know, I'm at home putting this together, you know, and even in some of the rider interviews, there's some stuff, you know, where they get emotional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it hits me, yeah. You know, and I guess the day that it doesn't hit me, then I should probably stop doing it, right?
Right, yeah.
But that's kind of why we all do this, right?
And I think that's what's so good about the interviews that you do, you know, where with the black screen behind them and it's kind of dramatic. But it's good because and I think it goes back to you saying before that they know, like, it's important and they start to express themselves a lot more than they probably ever had in the past, at least, you know, something that was going to be as public as that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the thing is right after the race for the podium, they you know, do their thing with you first. And, you know, sometimes, for the most part, they say a lot of the same things in with us, but it also changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they get a little more time to think about it, or we don't always get them right away, you know, especially this weekend. It's so hot outside. They're going to probably want to go take a shower, cool off, whatever, before they come to us. But, you know, that's the point where, you know, I can just kind of walk into their tent, you know, and look at Josh Herron or look at Gagne or whoever and say, hey, man, you want to come later? And then they'll just look at their watch. Dude, I'll be there in 15 minutes. And then I come back here. Boom, they show up. And, you know, we get it done.
Wow. But, so the episodes, the way they are, let me ask you this. I'm probably one of the only people that has noticed this, maybe not, but in the beginning, it was called Inside Moto America, yeah. Pressure to Rise. Yeah. And now it's become Pressure to Rise. It happened after, I think, the first year.
Yep.
What was the thought in that changing?
Somebody told me that it should drop the Inside Moto America.
Somebody who shall remain
yeah.
nameless?
Well, it doesn't matter who. It's just basically, I think the thought behind that was because Inside Moto America, which I did 2 years as well with pretty much the same team. And that was the one that Hannah hosted. Right. And so they wanted to differentiate right. that with Pressure to Rise because it's two completely different things.
Okay.
So dropping that off of the name was the right call, you know?
I think it's great because it goes to PTR and some other things that we deal with, you know, right. things happen, they become sort of part of the lexicon a little bit. Mm. So I want to ask you about the music. The theme music, was that written for Pressure to Rise?
You mean the title track?
Right.
Oh, no. That was me literally once Larry gave me the call and said, hey, we're going to change the show. Then I just basically for the next couple of weeks, I figured out, tried to find write a title, get a name for the show. And I just wanted to have a cool theme piece of music, you know, like Monday Night Football has or whatever. And I finally came up with Pressure to Rise. And then I just started looking at, you know, songs with pressure in it, with time, with all these elements. Because really, Pressure to Rise means really rise to the top of the podium, right?
Right.
Or rise in the stands. It could mean a lot of things. But that's really where it kind of came from, you know, rise to the top. But and then one day, you know, I'm just sitting there shuffling my music library. And Rival Sons' Pressure and Time came on that I've heard before, but never in my music search mode, right? And it came on, and he sang the first chorus, and I'm like, that's it. that's the song, because it basically describes the whole series and the whole thought process and the whole naming of the show.
Yeah, the lyrics are awesome. Yeah. They fit so well.
With pressure and time, I'm going to get mine. Come on. I mean,
yeah, it's perfect. I want to ask you about the music. I think we kind of all grew up in a time where you think about things like cartoons with Looney Tunes. Mm. A lot of the Looney Tunes were so powerful because of the music behind them that created the emotion that you were trying to feel. Mm. I think of that when Looney Tunes, the Bugs Bunny with the guy doing the opera. And he gives him helium at the end or something. And it's all this real classical music and everything, but it creates this feeling in this mood. Or they did like Wagner, that, you know, Flight of the Valkyries. They would just take this classic music and it would be on a cartoon. It'd be so cool.
Right.
And music creates these emotions. So when you create the music, when you come up with the music, how do you do that? Are you picking production music that's available and you piece it together based on the emotion you're trying to find, communicate or convey?
Yeah, we have three different music libraries that we use. They're all royalty free. And at the beginning of the year, you just download a crap ton of them. And you know, I categorize them, you know, dramatic or fast or high energy or somber or drone, you know. And then I just kind of try to shift it according to what happened, like PJ Jacobson's first win, right? That's dramatic. So there's this nice underscoring piece of music that, you know, was just sitting in my dramatic folder, you know, and I, it just comes from experience, you know, if you just kind of play a couple cuts and say, oh, that's it. Boom. Music, you know, I actually changed some of the music and the way I do it because of a YouTube comment from in the first season. I actually read all the YouTube comments. I want to know all the good and the bad. You know, it's not like, you know, and yeah, there's some funny ones on there, that's for sure. But somebody said in the first season, hey, I don't need to always be told how I'm supposed to feel by the crazy music over the top. You know, and I'm like, because I think in the first season, I think we probably put more music in wall to wall. And it made me kind of re-look at some episodes. I'm like, you know what? This guy's right, you know? And because it's a viewer that you know, watches the show. So everybody's got input. Nobody's really right or wrong. It's all subjective, right? And so that kind of changed. So now there's less music and there's more just dialogue in spots just because of that. So thank you, YouTube guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's good that you take that criticism and work with it constructively. So we know with Formula One, they have Drive to Survive. And I hear people say, you know, some people like Drive to Survive better than they do like watching Formula One racing. And I'm sure there are probably people out there that watch Pressure to Rise and love the story that's being told, maybe more than just, you know, sitting and watching racing or qualifying or whatever. Do you feel when you're doing that you're Pressure to Rise, that you and your team are trying to promote Moto America? You're just trying to tell a story. And I don't mean just what do you, is it always incumbent in your mind on doing what's best to promote Moto America?
I think that promoting Moto America just comes naturally because it's telling the stories of people in the series, you know?
Yeah, and if you promote those people, you're actually promoting
them
at the same time.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a tough question to answer because it just happens organically, really.
Right.
You know?
Okay, I know we're running out of time, but I want to ask you one quick question. Uh-oh. So it's going to be a quick answer. And it's whether you think of it or not, but Steve Radley, is there a moment that you are particularly most proud of or that you remember, something that you captured from all of these episodes that really stands out to you?
Man, I don't know. For some reason, this is a weird answer.
That's good.
But I think it was the second to last episode last year, season two. There's a moment when Petrucci sits down and you can see on his face that this, you know, it was back and forth with Gagne all year, right? We went into the last round, and I could see on his face that he knew that he couldn't beat him straight up.
It was over.
And he's just sitting there. I have a shot from behind him. Nick King has a shot from the front, and I found the perfect piece of music to play through it and just kind of sat on that for a while. And it's like, it's still kind of, you know, and it's funny because that episode I actually watched in my backyard. I got a movie theater, and not a theater, but a little screen in my backyard. And I watched that when I was done. And that moment, that's one of those moments that kind of like hit me. I'm like, okay, this little section is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could go on and on. I've got many more questions. I'm sure Paul does too, but it's good to have you on.
Yeah, appreciate it.
As being showrunner for Pressure to Rise. And I know you got a great team behind you. It's really fun from our perspective to work with you guys and see what you put out. And like I said, every new episode that comes out, it's so compelling. So I encourage all of Moto America fans to make sure you watch Pressure to Rise. It really shows the Medallia Superbike Championship in its best light. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you out there on Hot Pit.
Yeah, see you.
It's going to be real hot.
It's real hot pit this week, right?